As we continue our study in the book of Proverbs, we are still in the 6th chapter. And in our last lesson, we had gotten into this 6th verse. In this part of the chapter, he's talking about the sluggard and telling the sluggard what to do in order to correct his bad ways. The sluggard is the one who doesn't take care of himself. The sluggard loves to take his ease and live in idleness, and he doesn't mind any particular business. He doesn't stick to a job. He doesn't bring home any fruits of his labors. He'll also be careless in the business of religion, too, because he's going to be slothful toward God. And it's a sure way to poverty to be slothful. And so this is what he's talking about, to the person who is of this nature. And he tells this sluggard to consider the ant. Verses 6 through 8 say, "Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer, and gathereth fruit in the harvest." So the sluggard is told to have the ant to teach him. Go to the ant and consider her ways. And when a person is considering the ways of another, in this case the sluggard is considering the ways of the ant, they're observing what this other object does, and they're then going to be able to apply what they learn. In Philippians 3:17, Paul says, "Brethren, be followers together of me, and mark them which walk so, as you have seen, as you have us for an example." So if we see another person is doing the right thing, we can consider their ways and pattern our lives after their ways. Well, in this case, the sluggard was so bad, he has to go to the ant, a lowly insect, to pattern his life after the ways of this ant. So the lesson that here is here for us to be learned. Certainly it's one for the sluggard to learn. He says, "Consider her ways and be wise," verse 6. This is the main thing we must accomplish in all of our learning. Not only to know facts, but to be wise after having observed and learned the facts. Know how to apply and make good use of the facts. The sluggard is to learn to provide meat in the summer. That is, we're to provide for future times and not care for the present time only. Not consume all and lay up nothing for the future. In all our worldly affairs, we must use good judgment in how we are to use our blessings. We lay in for winter, for difficult times, for unexpected needs. We provide for our old age, and much more do we apply this principle to our spiritual needs. We must provide for our spirits when the time comes for them to be separated from our physical body. When we have blessings, we must provide for a time when we will have need. When we have possessions, provide for the time when we will not have them. In times of plenty, prepare for times of want. In youth, prepare for old age. In life, prepare for death. In time, prepare for eternity. In the times of probation given to us now by God, we must prepare for the time of judgment. We must labor while we're able to prepare for the time when we're not able. Even in the summer, when the weather is hot, the ant is busy gathering food and laying it up and does not take her ease or pleasure as some other insects that sing and sport in the summer and then they perish in the winter. The ants help one another. If one has a grain too big to carry, her neighbor will assist her. We certainly can learn from the ant. We must use our opportunities. We must gather when it's available in the proper time, as the ant does in summer and harvest. If we have wisdom, we will use the season when it favors us, because that which can be done then may not be done at all in another time. Strike while the iron is hot. Walk while you have the light. Also note what advantage we have over the ant in learning this lesson. This will make our slothfulness and neglect even worse when we idle away our time. She has no guides, overseers, or rulers to help her. But she does it herself, following the instincts of nature. We can learn from other persons and accumulate knowledge, advancing our civilization, but the ant has to learn all from herself. This is true of all nature's creatures. A dog may learn some tricks, but he cannot pass the knowledge on to his offspring. The puppy must start from the beginning to learn his tricks. But not so with man. Humans can accumulate knowledge and pass it on to future generations. Future generations do not need to start all over to discover what they know. They can learn in a few minutes what it took others a lifetime to learn. And the knowledge can be greatly advanced, so we get from horse-drawn carriages to automobiles. For example, we can manufacture and use light bulbs without having to reinvent the light bulb every generation. Yet the end has no instructor, but we need to learn from her. So the more shame to us, who do not take advantage of our ability to learn, our ability to accumulate knowledge. Since we do have instructors we can learn from, we have parents and teachers at all levels to assist us in learning how to conduct and take care of ourselves. There is no excuse for our being a sluggard. And we have great assistance in our salvation if we will but just use it. The gospel of Christ is the power of God to salvation to everyone that believeth, Romans 1:16. With all the helps we have for salvation, we shall have no excuse if we neglect it. Jeremiah 6:18-19, the NIV version. Therefore, hear, O nations, observe, O witnesses, what will happen to them. Hear, O earth, I am bringing disaster on this people, the fruit of their schemes, because they have not listened to my words and have rejected my law. God's word is our teacher, but we have to hear. In verses 9 through 11, he reasons earnestly with the sluggard about his poor lifestyle. There he says, how long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou rise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. He is here rebuking and reasoning with the sluggard, calling him to his work as a master would awake his servant. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard, he says. Just how long would you sleep if you were left alone? If it were left up to you, just what would your plan be to wake up? The question for the sluggard is, how long? This is a very appropriate question. How long will you neglect your duties of life? How long will you neglect your work to support yourself or your family? How long will you neglect improving your skills with more education or training? How long will you neglect obeying the gospel to serve God? How long will you fail to study God's word and know his will for you? How long before you become a better husband or a better wife? How long before becoming a better father or mother? Or a better son or daughter? Or a better neighbor? How long before becoming a better employee or a better employer? How long will you continue to put off and neglect what you need to do? How long will you waste your opportunities as though there were no judgment day coming? When will you stir up yourself and do that which you have to do? And which, if left undone, will leave you forever undone? As you slumber in the way of sin and eternal danger, have you not slept enough? Is not the day forespent? Does not the Creator call? Are not the Philistines upon thee? When then will you arise? Yet the tendency for the sluggard is to want more sleep. Verse 10, he says, yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. When the sluggard is aroused, he begs for more sleep, a little more slumber. Give me some more time. His warm bed feels good, and he cannot bear to think of getting up and going to work. So he promises that he needs a little more sleep, a little more slumber, a little more folding of the hands. Then maybe he will do his business. But he deceives himself. The more his slothfulness is indulged, the more it prevails. Let him sleep a while, and still he's in the same frame of mind. He asks for a little more sleep, yet a little more. He never thinks he has enough, yet he may promise to come soon. And so the great work he was intended for is left undone by being put off a little longer from day to day. And they are cheated of all their time by being cheated 1 minute at a time. A little more sleep proves to be an everlasting sleep. But the Bible gives him fair warning of the fatal consequences of his laziness. Verse 11 says, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. Poverty and want shall come upon those who are slothful in their business. People who neglect their affairs not only not go forward, but they will go backward. One that traveleth has been interpreted as a bandit or a prowler. So the phrase armed man gives the same idea. He's saying that poverty will attack you and you'll have no defense. It'll come like an armed bandit to rob you. So the sluggard has nothing good to look forward to. He's given a very serious warning here, and we should heed this warning. We have a change of subject now as we move into verse 12. We're given the characteristic of a truly evil person, and the more we know about what is bad and what is wrong, the better we can serve God ourselves. So I'd like to read verses 12 through 15. A naughty person, a wicked man, walketh with a froward mouth. He winketh with his eyes, he speaketh with his feet, he teacheth with his fingers, frowardness is in his heart, he deviseth mischief continually, he soweth discord. Therefore his calamity shall come suddenly, suddenly he shall be broken without remedy. The word here, naughty, means a worthless, useless person, also a scoundrel. It is literally a man of Belial, which is a term that came to be used of the devil himself. 2 Corinthians 6, verse 15, and what concord hath Christ with Belial? This person is up to no good and is dangerous to be dealt with. If the sluggard is to be condemned because he does nothing, then much more those who do bad things and work to see how much bad they can do. This is a man of Belial, a wicked man, who makes it his business to do evil. We have a description of the ways he does evil. Verse 12 says, a naughty man, a wicked man, walketh with a froward mouth. His froward mouth is a major tool of his wickedness. His lies and deceitful words were a main characteristic of him. Verse 13, he winketh with his eyes, he speaketh with his feet, he teacheth with his fingers. Apparently this was a common practice even in the days of Solomon. As the victim was approached, the evil man, fearing detection, and in order to hide his intentions, would speak lies to his victim while giving signals with his eyes and hands and feet to someone else who was in on the deception to carry out the evil deed. He uses every means he can to carry out evil, tongue, eyes, hands, and feet, very artfully and with a definite purpose. He has the cunning of a serpent and carries out his projects with a great deal of craft and management. Those about him who are also tools of his wickedness understand the meaning of a wink of the eye or a stamp of the feet or a motion of his fingers. He gives orders for doing evil, but is not detected because of his cunning and tricky nature. He uses oral and body language, which an honest person is not acquainted with, nor should the honest man want to know such language. And this evil man may not be enriching himself so much as he just has the downright desire to produce evilness and ungodliness in his heart. His primary goal is to do evil to someone else. Verse 14 says, frowardness is in his heart. He deviseth mischief continually. He soweth discord. He is continually devising one evil deed after another, purely for the sake of doing evil. A man of Belial indeed, of the devil, resembling him not only in cunningness, but in intent to do evil. And what will his end be? Verse 15 says, therefore shall his calamity come suddenly. Suddenly shall he be broken without remedy. His calamity shall come and he shall be broken. He that deviseth evil shall fall into evil. His ruin will come without warning. It shall come suddenly. Suddenly he shall be broken. He shall be punished for his wicked deeds. And this will be without relief. He should be broken and never be whole again. He should be broken without remedy. This is the condition we want to avoid. Now in the next four verses, verses 16 to 19, we have a list of those things which are especially repulsive to God. Any of these things are found in the men of Belial, whom he has just described in the preceding verses, and he emphasizes the last thing, the seventh thing, he that soweth discord among brethren. God hates sin. God hates all sin. He hates nothing but sin. But there are some sins which he has a special hatred for, and this is the category of those sins mentioned here. These are sins which are especially harmful to our neighbor. This shows how concerned God is for our well-being, that he especially hates those things which harm humans. This is the reason the men of Belial must expect their ruin to come suddenly and without remedy, because the Lord hates their practices, and they are an abomination to him. Verse 16 says, these six things does the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination unto him. These things which God hates, we must hate in ourselves and not just in others. We must hate for us to have any of these things. Verse 17 says, a proud look, a lying tongue, and hand that shed innocent blood. So the first thing he names here is a proud look. This is haughtiness, conceitedness of ourselves, and contempt of others. A proud look. There are seven things that God hates, and pride is the first, because it is the cause of much other sin. God hates pride in the heart, but when it prevails so that it shows in the face, the proud look, this is especially hateful to God. Secondly, he names, next to a proud look, is a lying tongue. A lying tongue is an abomination to God. There's nothing more sacred than the truth. There's nothing more abominable to God than a lying tongue. There's nothing more necessary to good conversation than speaking truth. To lie to a person is the same as stealing from him. God and all good persons abhor lying. The third thing he mentions are hands that shed innocent blood. God hates the harming of one human by another human. This law is qualified by the phrase innocent blood, implying that there are situations where one has been duly found to be guilty in which physical punishment may be inflicted. For example, nations have the authority to punish those who do not respect the laws of the land, Romans 13. And although parents can punish their children for disobedience, they have no right to inflict any bodily injury. We must be very careful to do no harm to another human. Two major qualities of the devil are that he is a liar and a murderer, John 8:44. So as a lying tongue, even so hands that shed innocent blood, are things which God hates, because these things are of the devil and they serve the devil. And one of the great problems with our society today is that we are freely shown, and so are our children, acts of violence over and over again on things like television and certain books and magazines. This is just a part of everyday life for humans today in our society. And we as Christians should be avoiding these things. God hates these things. God takes no pleasure in this. And so we should not be entertained with violence. We should not be entertained with acts of doing harm to another, shedding another's blood. We should not be having our children to be entertained by those things and to learn to do acts of violence. God hates it. And it's one of the things that's an abomination to God. But today, it's prevalent everywhere as a form of entertainment. The fourth abomination to God that's listed here is a heart that deviseth wicked imaginations. As is stated in verse 18, this is a heart that is plotting and contriving ways to sin. This is a mind that can craft and make sin. This is the ability to produce and manage sin in ways that would not be naturally in one's mind. This mind is acquainted with Satan and wants to devise new means to carry out his will. The more imagination used in the production of sin, the more it's an abomination to God. This is a gross misuse of the human mind. And the fifth abomination to God is feet that be swift in running to mischief, as also is mentioned in verse 18. This is committing sin with vigor and diligence. It is as if they were afraid they will not have enough time to spend at sin. They want no delay in satisfying their lust or desires. As they sin with such eagerness and energy, as they are so industrious in doing the devil's work, it puts those of us who want to do good to shame, as we go about so awkwardly and clumsily trying to do what is right. And the sixth abomination is listed here as that of being a false witness. Verse 19 says, a false witness speaketh lies. To knowingly give false testimony is a great disregard for God, who will judge us according to our words. And false testimony is a great injury to our neighbor. For when one is attacked by false testimony, all of his dearest possessions in this world are now put in jeopardy. And this is the hardest kind of attack to defend against. There's seven things which God hates, and lying involves two of them. God not only hates any kind of lying, he doubly hates it. And the seventh abomination that's mentioned here is, he that soweth discord among brethren. Verse 19. This is making trouble between friends, whether kin or not. This is using all the wicked means possible to alienate their affections for each other and to destroy the love they have for each other. The God of love and peace hates him that sows discord among brethren. For God delights in harmony and peace. Discord among brethren is against the very purpose of creation. Those in the family of God can never please him by being at odds with each other. Those who sow discord by talebearing and slandering, by carrying stories that inflame feelings, by aggravating every chance for a good relationship, and suggesting things which cause jealousies and ill feelings, and stir the fires of contention, are definitely preparing for themselves a fire of the same nature. So these are seven detestable sins, and they provide a profound glimpse into the sinfulness of mankind in general. And so to those who are intelligent, to those who have minds of a normal person, we simply can see that God is telling us the things he dislikes. These are the sins he dislikes. These are things that are an abomination to him. And so it's a simple matter for us then to try to avoid being guilty of these things ourselves. It's very simple. God lays it out here for us so plainly. It's a matter of us deciding, yes, we're going to do it. That concludes our lesson at this time. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.